Hey, folks, welcome to a new edition of the show. Before we get to my guest, in 2 weeks, May 31st to June 3rd, I'm going to be at a place in Sunnyvale, California called Rooster Teeth Feathers. A great club's been there a long, long time. Come on out. Check me out. That's just outside of San Jose and San Francisco. So come west and hang out. And June 8th and 9th, I go all the way east. And I'm at Governor's in Levittown in Long Island. So go on my website. You can see the dates there. And I want to talk to you about my sponsor, deepdiscount.com. You know, I need them so that I can give you this podcast. So we got some great deals this week. If you don't know of them, you should. They have great savings on all sorts of movies, TV shows, apparel. You can go to my website, paulmercurio.com, click on the link to deepdiscount.com. Right now, you'll save big on prequels, sequels, and collections, thousands of choices like Schwarzenegger and all the Terminator movies who I needed to have 2 days ago because I was getting a cab in New York and another guy seemed to be trying to get the same cab. I got in the cab first. I kind of felt guilty. I wasn't sure if he had the right to it. I got out of the cab, walked across the street and said, "You can have the cab." Guess what he said to me? "No, it's okay. I'm going downtown anyway." And walked away and did not thank me. This is why I'm not a big fan of people. But I could have used Terminator right there. I think it would have been a justifiable termination. Instead, I just keyed his cab. Anyway, we also have Jurassic Park Collection, one of the biggest movie franchises of all time. Epic films and movie magic. Okay, you got dinosaurs roaming the earth and an amazing theme park on a remote island. What more do you want? And they're naked. Please, come on. Just go see for yourself. Go to deepdiscount.com. There are all sorts of great, great deals going on right now. You don't rent anymore. You don't search for movies and TV shows. You just click the Deep Discount logo on my homepage. This way, they know you're a friend of my show and buying stuff because I told you about them. And not only will you find classics from back in the day and hard-to-find titles, but new releases too. Out this week, The 1517 to Paris, directed by Clint Eastwood. True story, starring the real heroes who've been friends since childhood, and how they saved hundreds of lives halfway around the world. So go to deepdiscount.com, get a copy right now, and just cruise around, man. There's really cool stuff on the site. I just got the entire first season of the original Batman TV series with Adam West and his boyfriend in tights. Very, very cool to see the old school Batman. So go to deepdiscount.com, go to my website, paulmercurio.com, click on the link, it'll take you right to the site. And my guest this week is Mindy Rickles, Don Rickles' daughter. A legendary comedian. His daughter's now doing stand-up. Very, very funny. Very cool conversation about what it's like growing up with a legend and her stand-up in her own right. So enjoy Mindy, and we'll see you on the road. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show this week. Thanks for checking in. Very excited to have my guest on, who you may have seen on The Late Late Show on CBS. She's a really great comedian who's worked all over the country, at the Trop in Vegas. She's worked with people like Louis Anderson, Jeff Garlin, Bob Saget, and has a regular show of her own at the world-famous Laugh Factory in Los Angeles, California. It's every Monday. It's called Monday, Monday, Mindy. And did I get that right? Monday, Monday?
Yes, it's hard to remember.
Two Mondays. It's like...
Right.
It's,
I have a problem with the end. That's what leads me to it. Right?
This is the voice of Mindy Rickles. Nice to have you on the show, Mindy.
Thanks so much, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And if people recognize the last name, your dad was Don Rickles, great comedian, but you're doing great stuff on your own. And just wanted to talk to you about everything you got going on. And you know, it's funny because we were just talking, we both have kids and them growing up and stuff, but it gets a little, I'm just always on top of it and like worried constantly. And I don't know if that ever goes away, you know?
Yeah, no, I have two teenagers, but I'm very much, I'm trying to constantly find the newest tracking app. And of course, my son's like, "I don't know why it doesn't work, Mom." You know, never seems to work.
Right.
And I would like to just Velcro myself to that. And that would be the best tracker for me.
Exactly. I have this thing with my son that I get nuts that he doesn't pick up the phone when I call him because, he'll just text me. literally, and then I will call him within 3 seconds, and the thing rings to voicemail because he has some setting, like a do not disturb setting on it. So every time I call him, it's like trying to call the president. I have to go through, like, then I have to hang up and then text him to call me. And I lose my shit like every other day about it. And I'm like, you're right there. I know you're there. You just hit send on the text. Why are you screening my calls? Why am I screening my calls? Like,
oh, yeah, that's how my kids, I thought I was the only one. You know, people are like, oh, my kid's a genius. I do that. I imitate my kids. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
So I'm glad that I'm not the only one that imitates them like that.
But yeah.
My older one, yes. I mean, he's driving and I'll text him, you know, and he'll say, Mom, you know, I was driving, so I didn't want to, you know, get back to him. I'm like, don't text me back if you're driving, you know, because that's also very frightening.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
exactly.
I text. I want an immediate response, but I don't want him to respond if he's driving, you know.
Right.
And it's, yeah, it goes on and on like that.
Is it hard?
Relaxing in
no,
any way.
Not at all. Is it hard to go on the road for you, or do you have the freedom now that they're a little older and you can get away and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, I wouldn't have done it when they were younger. It's easier now. I mean, I've gone by myself, and occasionally my husband's gone with me. But, you know, even if I've gone, you know, I'm constantly calling in. And my husband, as my dad would have said, is like a Valium, because he always said my mother was a Valium. So my husband is a Valium, and I'm like, you know, someone that's like withdrawal from the Xanax. So we're totally opposite. So I'm constantly checking in, you know, they're teenagers, and I'm like, how is their bowel movement?
Exactly.
But even so, I just, yeah, I'm always worried, and that's just like my nature.
Yeah.
So.
Did you, but you mentioned, like, in sort of reading a little bit about you, you mentioned, like, your sort of, your cadence and rhythms and sort of like your dad and all of that. But obviously you're your own person, your own stand-up. And, but you did start later in life. You were a nursery school teacher, right? And did you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, years ago I did acting, and I'm sure, Paul, you're like, oh, yeah, she had a big career. you know, it was like, you know, Astronaut 1, Astronaut 4, Woman at Bar 9. That was my acting years ago.
You were brilliant in Astronaut 4. We still talk about it in my house.
I was up for, like, a Goonie Award or something.
I stopped watching the Emmys because you weren't nominated for anything.
That, I got a lot of that. I heard that quite a bit. But, yeah, so actually I did years ago In the Heat of the Night. Carol O'Connor was like a very close friend, and he just said, I want you to star on the show, you know, so he flew me to Georgia and I played, it was a stretch, the rabbi's daughter. So, you know, I have a lot of Meryl Streep in me, you know, no accent, but I worked, it was hard to get into, you know, what is it like to be a Jew? You know, it was hard. I couldn't, being a Jew, I still had a stretch.
Did you research it? Did you go to synagogues?
I traveled, yeah, to like all the Scandinavian countries looking for a Jew, but I couldn't find any. But yes, I did that. And then it was funny because Carol O'Connor kept, like, you know, putting all these shots, you know, close-ups of me. And I thought, you know, I had these riveting thoughts. And when you look at me, it's like a blank stare in every scene, you know. And Jerry Stiller played my father.
Oh, my God.
Reach.
Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly.
Same age as my dad. It was a reach. You know, it was like making the Pope my father. But it was really fun. But that was my acting.
How old were you?
How old am I?
How old were you at the time?
Oh, how old was I then? Mm. Okay. I was like 25.
Oh, okay. All right.
And yeah, and all I really cared about when they would, you know, I'd be doing some dramatic scene in the cemetery, you know, about talking about the Gentile part of the cemetery. And all I cared about was when the makeup, how's my makeup, you know, I was very into my, you know, dramatic part. But then years later, yes, I started stand up, you know, like 6 years ago. So much, much later in life.
Yeah.
My dad, he never really encouraged it. And he was always like, oh, you think you're as funny as I am? No, Dad. So it was much later, but it's been fun, definitely. And I do have similar intonations, and we always have like a similar sense of humor. So
yeah, and I know you mentioned in an article, you said that there are times I could be on stage and I could say something that would sound exactly like my father, and I think I'm not going to say that right now. So you'll like edit yourself in the moment and just try to move away from that, so there aren't you're not you're not sounding too much like him. Do you still do that?
Well, no. I mean, I try not to, you know, edit myself.
Right.
Our intonations are very similar. I mean, I'm not going to say something that he would have said, although I would probably say it in the same intonations, like, you know, to someone. I do talk to the audience, but unlike my dad, I wouldn't go, I'm going to put you in a hole. You know, I don't say that because they would be like, she's copying him. And I'm like, I'm not. This is how I sound, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because my dad used to say, I wonder why you never get a second date with a guy. Maybe because you sound like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, you sound like a little bit, and I don't mean this as an insult. Is your mom's name Barbara? Is it Barbara?
Yes.
Okay, so when he would imitate your mom, you kind of sound a little bit like him imitating your mom. Like, I don't know, like... Oh,
absolutely. And I actually, my voice sounds like my mother, too. So it's like a weird Sybil, you know, him and my mother. Yes, like he would say, yes. And I imitate my mom also because she's so... I mean, I always imitated her. And she always, my dad would say, you know, the tongue... She would have a tongue, like, sticking out of her mouth, which she still does. Like, she's, you know, swatting a lizard or something. But
like a bulldog? Like those bulldogs where the things just...
Yeah, exactly. And it's always like, listen, do you think that we could go sit in the back and have the stars come to our table to greet Donald? So, yes, we both sound the same imitating my mother.
She would call him Donald?
She called him, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Donald.
That's so great. You said about yourself, you know, I think there's an advantage. I kind of start a little later, too. You know, most people who get into stand-up either start at the teenage years or college years or right out of college. I was a lawyer before I did this and then didn't plan on doing it. And then I met Jay Leno at a private function. Oh, by the way, you did Christine Blackburn's Storyworthy show, right? I did that show.
I've done that a few times.
She's great. I love her. I did her show.
Yeah.
And she was on my show.
Great. And, you know... the game show, which makes me a little tense, and it's down to, like, you know, me and, like, the Emmy-winning writer, Valen. I'm like, God, who's going to win? I don't know. I'm sure it'll be me.
But I don't know why I just thought of that. My brain tends to jump around. But you started later, and I started later. I met Leno at a private function that my firm was invited to, and I had been writing jokes as a hobby. I don't know why, and I gave him my jokes. I said, you can have them. I'm never going to use them. And then he called me and started using some of them on The Tonight Show, and that's kind of how I got started, and then hired me, like, as one of those freelance writers. You know, they pay you per joke, and that's kind of how it started. But I do think there's an advantage to starting later. I think you're emotionally generally a little bit more settled, a little more confident in yourself, and you've got maybe more of life to tap into that's more interesting. Did you find that for yourself?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I had started, you know, in my 20s, it would have been way too much for me. I mean, I've, you know, always gone to therapy Monday through Friday, you know, 6 a.m. to midnight. So I don't think I could have even functioned doing stand-up. And, yeah, I think I have more of a perspective and all of that. But, yeah, it's definitely, even though it feels, you know, I feel sometimes like I'm older than all the, you know, everyone's like, I'm 19, I'm 12, you know.
Mm.
But I still feel like I definitely have, you know, more of a perspective on things now and have more to say.
Yeah, and you, I mean... I guess you could tap into your childhood, even though you grew up, in the home of a big star. But you do say that, you know, when your dad came home, he was just like a regular dad, and it was pretty much a normal childhood, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, we were very close. It wasn't like he didn't come home like in a tuxedo and go, let's fly a kite. You know, I'm going to be honest, Paul. I mean, if you want to say
really?
That kind of magic did not go on.
My dad would do that. He'd be done putting floors in for the day, and he'd put a tuxedo on, and we would fly kites, and then we'd hit a baseball. So, and he never got dirty somehow, and it never split. He never split his pants. Oh, that's hilarious.
No, I mean, my dad, you know, sat in his chair with his remote. If you took it, a fun game we like to play is it was called like hide the Afikoman, you know, in Passover. We would do hide the remote. And if we did that, he would, you know, collapse.
Yeah.
But as long as he had the remote and there were like 49 baseball games on, you know, I'd come home from school and be like, give me a kiss. You know, like it was the Pope or whatever. But,
and you had to kiss the ring. You had to kiss the ring.
I had to kiss the ring. Like, I had to kneel. I was like, Dad, you know, I'm wearing shorts. He's like, Dale. And so, you know, but he was always there, and we always, you know, traveled with him. Like, we would go to Vegas for, like, 6 weeks in the summer.
Right.
When it was, like, 705 degrees.
And this was before Vegas had stuff.
I'm glad we're all together here. And I sit in a closet. And, you know, roast marshmallows.
What would you do? So, like, no jail, because all you have is basically a swimming pool at the hotel, and that's it. I mean,
right.
So is that pretty much what you did, was just hang out at the pool and stuff like that?
Well, you know, it's funny, because I always wanted to stay at the hotels. Like, if once in a while we did, I would, like, call up, you know, in those days. Mm. I'm 90. But, you know, you had the, at the pool, they would, like, you know, paging, you know, I was paging Dan Tana, telephone please, Mr. Dan Tana. You know, I love that. But my mother was always like, we're going to stay at a house. Because the hotel would have a house that you could stay in. And you think, oh, like nowadays, you know, Celine stays in like this magnificent mansion. No,
right.
It wasn't like that.
Right.
It's like one hotel, it was the Pink House, where it was like Liberace had vomited. Cherubs everywhere. And the, you know, and beads, like those hanging beads going into the kitchen, like
right.
It was, you know, Sharon Tate in the 60s. I mean, it was just, they weren't pretty. And I was like, you know, Eloise, I love these references that probably a lot of your audience gave me. Like Eloise at the Plaza, my mother said when I was 3 and we walked into a house, I was like, where's the lobby?
Okay.
You know, that's what I said. Because I just want to stay at the hotel. And she's like, we're going to stay at the Pink House where Liberace vomited.
Oh.
You know? So I hated that. But, you know, and yeah, we would swim in the pool.
Yeah.
I would have swimming lessons there, I remember. And then they would throw you into the deep end. You know, it's like a POW or waterboarding. And my mother was like, that she'll come again tomorrow for the day.
The day.
So that was like my summer. Yes.
Wow.
So that was the summer. And my mother, my parents would go to the show at night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'd go to dinner. And
yeah.
They, you know, it was when everyone would dress up in Vegas. But,
yeah.
You know, and we would go to, I mean, sometimes I would be like a little Keno girl. I might have been a little kid. You know, they'd let me go through the coffee shop as a Keno girl.
Right. That's a
lot. And now when I've referenced, when I've said on stage, Keno.
Yeah.
My husband's like, nobody knows.
you're transporting.
I mean, I don't even know, and that's the problem. Like, I've always had, like, when I was 4 years old, I had, like, the mind of, like, a 9-year-old. So I'll be on stage and I'll make these. My husband will be like, I think you should stop with the Gloria Swanson. The 19-year-old Hispanic audience doesn't know.
Doesn't really. Try to at least bring it up to the 70s, maybe, or
80s. I know, right. So I'm like, how about that Ariana Grande? I gotta try to get, you know, beyond.
It was just commonplace for you, I guess, too, to be around, you know, big stars. I mean, you know, he was essentially not technically in the Rat Pack, but very close to Frank and these Dean and these guys and Carson and whatever. And when you were around these people, was it, you know, just, I know they're probably not on, but was there an intimidation factor? What was it like? Was it just sort of guys, friends hanging out, like any group of friends would be hanging out?
You know, even though my dad, and it's like Frank Sinatra's kind of the one that got my dad started making his career very big when he would start bringing, this was even before I was born, bringing like big stars like Judy Garland to the shows and things like that. But
where did he first see your dad? I was just curious. Like, how did
where
he?
Where did I first see him?
No. Where did he first see him?
Come on, Paul.
No.
This was about me.
No.
Who cares? Frank Sinatra, he's a nothing. Let's talk about my Monday Mindy.
Well, we will.
Factor,
don't worry about it.
Oh, Frankson, you mean where did he first see my dad?
Yeah, like how did he first discover him, or did he start to come to work together?
I think, you know, my dad used to work at the Slate Brothers in L.A., and I'm not sure if he first saw him there. I think he might have seen him in Vegas in the lounge when he would work shows, like at, you know, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 in the morning, and 4 in the morning.
Mm.
And Frank may have come, I don't know exactly, but he saw him. And my dad went over to him and said, you know, relax yourself, Frank, punch somebody. And all the, you know, mafia guys looked over, is he going to laugh? And then Frank started laughing, so then they all started laughing. So Frank loved my dad, so that's when he would start coming in and bringing in Judy Garland and Cary Grant and all these big stars. And that's what kind of put my dad on the map.
Mm.
And that's what took him to, like, a level. And people always thought he worked, like, the Catskills. You know, he never really did. He never did that.
Right.
So he got on a level above sort of a million other comics that you kind of know, but they never got to his level. And he would have said it was, you know, because of Frank, you know, loving him and bringing in all these people, and then those people loved him. And so that's how, you know, he got to, like, a higher level. But, you know, growing up, we didn't hang out with Frank. I mean, my dad and my parents' best friends for my whole life were Bob and Ginny Newhart.
Right.
And so Bob Newhart was always my dad's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very low-key and not really the opposite of my dad. And so that was his best friend. So it's not like we hung out with, you know, famous con. It's not like, you know, where's Uncle Sammy tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was more.
I have his glass eye. I found Uncle Sammy's glass eye. Where is he? Is he coming?
I know, right. I used to roll after the swimming lesson. I would, like, roll it on the lawn, like, you know,
call hide the glass eye. That'd be fun.
Right, yeah. That was what we did.
Oh, yeah, God.
Well, my childhood was definitely not like Casino or whatever.
Yeah.
But so it was mostly, you know, my parents' friends, you know, they would have been friends with certain comics like Jack Carter or Norm Crosby, but it wasn't like, you know, their friends were, you know, Frank Sinatra and Peter Lawford or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we
fairly
normal. Yeah, we had a... And just one other thing on your dad. We had a great interaction with him. I used to work on The Daily Show, and he was coming on as a guest, and we were all huge fans. And Tony was his guy, right? Was his
his
manager. And we were like, and he was playing in Atlantic City. And so we said, we'd love to come see him. Can we get some tickets? And he set us up, and we got a bus, a small bus, and like 12 or 15 of us, the writers, we went out, and we're like, we want to sit down front. You know, I was one of the writers, and we're like, you know, we want to, hopefully he'll pick on us or talk to us, right? So we sit right down front, and he comes out in the tuxedo, and the band's playing, and he's just pacing the stage back and forth like a panther, you know, like kind of looking to see what he was going to go for. And the first thing he said was this comedian out of San Francisco, Jim Earl. I don't know if you know or heard, but anyway, very funny guy, but he's very thin and he's very, very pale and he's very, very white. And he's pacing and pacing, and he stops right at Jim and he goes, "I'm a friend, get a mask." And then he just kept going. And then we just were like, we can go to heaven now. And then he did all the great stuff. Like, I was talking to a Puerto Rican guy. Is he coming at me? Is he coming at me? Does he have a knife? Is he coming at me? Like all this,
right.
Like it was just, but he was very sweet and quiet. We talked to him at the show. And he was very unassuming and was interested in us and asked us how we were doing and everything. Very different from the, you know, that sort of persona that he had on stage. But just a terrific guy and was really sweet to us. And that was like a big, big moment for us being comedians and writers and all that stuff. It was really exciting, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, he loved, you know, talking to people and listening to them. I mean, he always said to me, you know, if I didn't do this, I think I could have been a therapist. And I'm like, don't get crazy, Dad. I don't think so.
How did that...
If I went to therapy, he'd be like, did they mention my name at all? I'm like, Dad,
yeah.
This is my therapy session.
Right, yeah. I saw an article where you said a couple of times you'd come home and you said, what did they say about me? And then you said, they don't even know who you are.
I would do stand-up, I mean, even now, you know, he never did, like, Comedy Store, these clubs, so... He would be like, so what do they pay you a show?
Mm.
And I'm like, Dad, they don't pay you for that. How big is your dressing room? You know, I get $100,000 a show. What are you getting? And I'm like, Dad, they set me up in an alley with, like, you know, a paper towel to wipe my ass. And there's no, you know, he didn't get any.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Funny.
It's a whole other
but,
thing.
But also, when you said Atlantic City, it reminded me, because we would also, when we weren't in Vegas, you know, we were in Atlantic City. So, Paul, you know, my childhood, very glamorous.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Just like rich kids of Instagram, you know, just like south of France and Stade,
yeah.
I was in Atlantic City.
You're a Kardashian before they were, you were a Kardashian before they were Kardashians.
Exactly. There you... Reno, that was my town. Yeah, Atlantic City on the boardwalk, it was like I could have weighed, you know, 220, and I would have been the skinniest person in town. And so, it was a woman, I mean, Howard Stern used to talk about her, who would lay, and this was a treat for me, she would lay outside of Caesar's on a bed. She had no arms and legs. And she would play a harmonica.
Oh, Jesus.
And those are like some of the highlights of my childhood, Paul. Again, like saying, oh, the home in Stade and my inheritance of $57 million. That was my childhood, watching her, and that was exciting.
But I do think that you know, my kid grows up in New York City, and I do think growing up the way you grew up, like, you do sort of mature faster than kids your age, and you tend to sort of have... I mean, I know you said you thought of I've thought of myself as an old soul. And do you think it's because of that sort of, you know, being a young kid in this very adult world all the time?
Yeah, I think so. And I always, I always wanted to be with the grown-ups. Mm. And my parents were very good friends with, I mean, I don't know if your audience remember, Toti Fields, who's a very famous...
Yeah, I know Toti. Yeah, I remember him.
And I always wanted to be with... all the grown-ups, and, you know, every Halloween, you know, when kids, whatever, they dress up, I was Lady. Not Lady and the Tramp.
Just Lady.
No, oh, I was just a lady. I always wanted to be a grown-up, and so I was always, you know, I had my friends, but I always wanted to be with, you know, Ginny Newhart and my mom and her friends, and, yeah, I think a lot of that. And my dad's, you know, their references, I always, you know, really related to that. Even now on stage, like I said, I do talk to the audience. Mm. And when you just say things that come out of my dad, I'll be like, oh, I'll have to, this would be one time when I might edit myself. I'll be like, oh, look who's here, Lois. And I'm like, Lois, nobody's name. You know, that's a name from like 1940, because my dad would have said, oh, Sylvie, I love your dress. That very, yes. But I always wanted to be with, you know, as a kid, I was very much like into, you know, all their references, old movies and all of that kind of
stuff. So as a kid, you weren't sort of like bored with or turned off by comedy because you were around it so much. Did you find you'd watch it on TV? Like, I loved watching stand up on the Carson Show and, you know, seeing your dad and other great comedians and Rodney and so forth and so on. Like, or did you kind of find because you... it was in your life in some way, shape, or form, even though your dad wasn't, you know, like you said, flying a kite in a tuxedo, like, that you kind of sort of stepped away, you kind of avoided it, like, didn't like seeing it very much, or?
Yeah, you know, I don't think, no, I didn't really watch comics, you know, I always went to my dad's shows many times, and I would go, you know, to Bob Newhart shows, and when we were in Vegas, it was more like I'd go see the Osmonds or Sonny and Cher, I'd prefer that. In terms of comedy, as a kid, I didn't watch stand-ups, really. I loved, like, the Carol Burnett Show. Mm-hmm. I loved that sketch comedy, and I loved the Mel Brooks movies.
Yeah.
High Anxiety, and... you know, all of those kinds of things I loved as a kid, and watching movies with Charles Grodin and just things like that. I was much more into comedy. And one of the things, because my dad rarely laughed at, you know, he wasn't just, he wouldn't laugh at just anyone. I remember, though, when if we watched the Carol Burnett Show together, he thought that was hysterical. And someone else that I loved watching her show with him because he thought she was hysterical was Maud.
Oh, yeah.
He loved that show.
Yeah.
And we loved her. So, Bea Arthur. So, it's things like that. But no, I didn't really watch stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
No, I guess because I was always, you know, that was such a huge part of my life.
Mm.
And like I said, I went to my dad's shows all the time. No, I mean, there were certain comics I did like David Brenner.
Yeah.
I loved. And I loved Richard Lewis. And I loved Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought she was just so ahead of her time and so unique.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, talk about edgy. That was edgy before there was edgy. Yeah. She defined it.
I prefer comics that are more like characters, you know, that are more sort of acting out things as opposed to, and I mean, you know, comics, I'm not like a joke teller.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I watch a comic that has like incredible material and is standing, that to me, I couldn't even do that.
So you're more of a, I know you, I saw you mentioned that you said you're more of a storyteller, and you considered your dad to be a storyteller as well, which that surprised me because.
I mean, he had a lot, he had punchlines, you know, that he worked, but you know, no one ever wrote for him. And I think he developed all of his material through the years in terms of, you know, telling some story. He said he started everything. He used to imitate everyone, his mother, and he imitated this one. So I think things kind of developed from there. But I think he just, you know, learned his comedy from himself, and just, you know, after he would do things over and over, then that became, you know, more his act.
Mm. You know, I really admire that you said straight up, you know, that, you know, being, you know, a daughter of someone famous, especially a famous comedian, is not something you're going to hide from. And if it can help you a little bit, that's fine. And I think that's right. And I think that's a great approach. I embrace that idea of it because, you know, it is a really, really hard business, especially, I think, if you're a woman. Maybe it's a little easier for women
older,
these days.
Yeah.
And so,
sure.
But, you know, it was that like a tough place to get to in terms of being able to sort of own the fact that you were, you know, Don's daughter and not feel you had to maybe apologize for it or in some way or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, people think, oh, you know, some people think that that's just so easy, then you get all this stuff. And, you know, I've learned you really don't. But on the other hand, yes, if you said to me, you're going to, you know, the rest of your career, you're going to have a hand puppet of your dad on your lap, you know, I would, like Lamb Chop, I would say, fine. Again, half your audience, who's Lamb Chop? Is that what she had for dinner last night? But, you know, and I see, I'm not going to name names, these actresses or people, oh, and of course, their parent is so crazy famous.
Right.
And they go in, and I said my name was, you know, Sally Smith. And I auditioned, and nobody knew who my father
right,
was.
Right, right,
and
right.
I got the part all on my own. It's
right.
Like, can you just stop it?
I know.
You know, please.
Yeah. That's what I really loved about it, because that's exactly what I was thinking about when I read you say that. It's like, thank God, somebody who's a child of a famous person just finally admitted, yeah, it definitely can help, you know, and not bullshit about
it. I'll say on another level, these models, you know, I grew up in the day of the supermodels, and they were real models, and mm-hmm. they came from wherever, and now these girls that are huge models that would have never been models then, and they're like, you know, I worked really hard for this, and it has nothing to do with mine. It's like, and they're like 20, and it's like, you know how stupid you sound like.
Right.
I mean, why don't you just admit, wow, I'm so lucky that, you know, my family name that equals porn got me this big career. You know, it's like, it's
right.
so absurd.
Right.
And yes, I will do whatever, you know. You know, that's why I admit, yeah.
But here's the thing that makes, it's a double-edged sword. Okay, so maybe it opens some doors for you, you know, that it wouldn't otherwise open for someone who didn't, you know, wasn't a daughter of a famous celebrity comedian. But then, and you said this, I'm quoting you, I think you have to have something to back it up. Otherwise, it's going to become very embarrassing. So I think it's easier in some ways and it's harder in some ways for you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I feel I have something to back it up, but when I fail, it may be more so because it's like, oh, look at her. She thinks she's as funny as her dad. You know, please.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we gave you this shot because of your dad, and, you know, look what I got. You know, so it's, and like you said, as a woman, you know, I'm not 19. So there's all these things. But yes, I think it can help in some ways, and when it doesn't help, it's worse almost. Because if it's like nobody knows you anyway, you can just sort of disappear off, you know. But they do; they might. Oh, that's Don Rickles' daughter, and
right.
She's not her dad, you know. Like
yeah.
That. So yeah, I think it's.
You know, you said so. Yeah, you said something about you and your dad, but I'm more interested about you on this. It's like, we both have a very helpless way about us. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's like my dad, you know, was brilliant, you know, and when he was on stage, that's, you know, where he belonged, but he was someone like, he didn't, you know, my mother, and she was like this, you know, growing up and whatever, she took care of everything. So, he wasn't like, I mean, and this is also most dads of that era. It wasn't like he was going to the market or, you know, going off and doing things. I mean, even now, well, I moved out, you know, when I was like 21, I moved into an apartment, and my mother you know, had always done for us. And I'm like, where does the mail go? You know, do I throw it out the window and like a bird
does
it up? I mean, I just had no idea how to do
that. How do you get food? You just open the window and yell for food and someone comes with food?
Exactly. And it's like, why does the electricity go out? And my mother's like, you didn't pay that electric bill. What's that? You know, like she showed, my mother showed me how to use a washer and a dryer. And things I'm not interested in would be a washer. I just blanked out. My face glazed over, and I didn't remember how to ever use it again. And to this day, if you showed me a washing machine, I'd say, what's that? Because my husband
does it. Yeah, but you know what? You need both people in life. Like, I think I'm more like you. But I think, you know, if you're a very creative type or very much in your head, or like my uncle was brilliant, a brilliant dentist, like genius level. He literally I remember like going to the 24-hour supermarket. We grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. And
I have a story about that with my dad.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. And by the way, my uncle would go, a different uncle, my uncle Archie, my mother's other brother, had a barbershop, and all he did was play Frank in the barbershop. And they had some article on him. He literally went for 40 straight years to see Frank at the Providence Civic Center. And I know he saw your dad a bunch of times, but to my uncle's generation, Frank was like Justin Timberlake to that generation, right? And they all wanted to be him and they dressed like him. But in Providence, my mother would go shopping late at night and my uncle would go shopping late at night because they're both crazy. And they'd run into each other. And my mother would be like, my uncle's pants would be unzipped. His hair was like crazy all over the place. He's like, Johnny, Jesus Christ, look at you. He's got a cigarette. That's when people were smoking in the markets. But he could tell you the history of calculus, but he barely could find his car keys, you know?
Right. And that's, I mean, my dad was a big star. For me, it's like, I'm a great star in my own head. How do you explain I think, you know, my husband is my handler. It's like, I'm your husband, you know? I'm
exactly.
Like, go, you know, sign some things for me and do the talent. But it's funny when you said Rhode Island, because years ago when I was my early 20s, I worked at Neiman Marcus for a while, and I met this guy who was in security. He was this Italian guy, you know, like 22, whatever, from Providence. Mm. And he became a deputy sheriff. Well, of course, I dated him for a couple of years. My dad, you know, never let me live that down. And I used to go to Providence.
Because it was an Italian guy? Because of an Italian guy?
Italian, a cop, you know.
Good.
So I would go to Providence once in the summer. I loved his parents. Once in the summer and once at Christmas. And, you know, I would say, Dad, I had a great time. He goes, go live with them and have a great life at the policeman's ball. You know.
That's hilarious.
You know, that was my whole, yeah.
Was it important for them for you to marry a Jewish boy, or did that not matter?
You know, yes, I guess it was, but they were not like Jewish parents. Like, you know, I would be throwing my headshot at them when they would go to dinner parties and be like, you know, find me a guy. You'll just have to figure it out. But, you know, meantime, yes, they wanted me to marry a Jewish guy, but they never were like our daughter. You know, they thought, like, you figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. I did marry a Jewish guy. So.
Oh, really? His name doesn't seem Jewish. He seemed like anglicized
I think
it.
The real name was Manikovitz something.
Oh,
they came over on the boat.
Manischewitz. Manischewitz, Jewish Goldberg.
I'm also from the Manischewitz but I don't like to talk about it. So I sometimes go by Mindy Rickles Manischewitz. Because anything to get in the door, you know, at the improv.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. You know who runs show business. Hey, when you're on the road now and you're all over the country, let people know what dates you have coming up, too. But what are you, I assume you're doing you. You're not adjusting your act. Are you talking about what's going on in your life and being a mom and being a wife and, I guess, maybe being the daughter of Don Rickles a little bit? Like, what sort of, are you pretty open in terms of what you're talking about these days?
Yeah, it's just, sometimes it's very tough if I'm on the road, you know. Sometimes certain places in the Midwest, and, you know, they may not know, they could be young or whatever, they may not know I don't talk about my dad in my act,
yeah.
But they may not even recognize the name, Or I'll look at the audience, and most of them are toothless, and it's like there's banjos. It's like the cast of Deliverance.
But are you talking about what's going on in your life then, right?
You're just talking about being a parent. But yeah. Sometimes it's harder. They may, you know, I sort of have this kind of New York sensibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do my best, but you can't, it's difficult to always be able to relate to every audience, you know.
Hey, listen, once a Jew, always a Jew, Mindy. Come on, right. You got to own it.
Exactly. So they're not always going to be like, you're fab. And like you said, if I were a guy and I had a certain way, you know, that's oftentimes could just run across the board.
But yeah.
Definitely, I have a certain way about me, you know. So sometimes, you know, it works and sometimes it's more difficult. I mean, like I said, I often talk with the audience. You
right.
know, I do talk to them, so that helps to kind of get a relationship.
Yeah. I mean, but also, you talked about your age, but I think it works in your favor. I know it's an ageist business, and young is important, but you have a lot to tap into in terms of just your life and growing up and whatever, and
right.
I could see that being a great idea for a show or, you know, whatever, but I feel like embrace.
Feel free to write that for me.
I actually wrote it up.
I know you have nothing going on. When you're not interviewing like the world's most brilliant scientist or the Pope, you're like, I got to get that Mindy Rickler on the show. What can I do? What do I need to speak?
Man, it was. You know how many phone calls and negotiations took place to get you on? It was brutal.
Sorry that you had to go through all of
it. It was brutal. Really, what's your Monday Mindy show like? Is it sort of a collection of comedians coming up? Is there sketch involved? Like, what kind of show is that?
It's a collection of different comedians that, you know, I bring in. I host it. You know, I do a set, and then, you know, I have different comedians that I like come in. I mean, I was lucky enough to have Bob Saget do a show and this next one I'm doing, Dab Fan, who was the first winner of Last Comic Standing, and Adam Ray is going to be on that show. So, you know, it's great when I can bring in, you know, comics that I really like and the Laugh Factory, Jamie Masada, who owns it.
I know Jamie. Yeah, it's a good guy.
He's been great. I mean, he's helped me so much. So that's been really fun to do.
How conscious have you been about finding your voice? Not because you're Don Rickles' daughter, but just as a comedian, just kind of figuring that out. Or did you kind of figure out your voice pretty quickly because, you know, you're older and, you know, you kind of, I think as you get older, you kind of really get to know who you are, about yourself. How was that process for you?
You know, I think I'm really still developing that. Initially, I really just was mostly doing like improv, which of course you can't do your whole act unless you're like, you know, Robin Williams improv. But
you mean talking to the audience kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, talking to individuals and sort of, you know, not back and forth, obviously, but me sort of, I mean, that's something my dad did, but that is something that I was always the most comfortable with. Of course, it doesn't always work, but if you said, just, you know, talk to the audience, that would be more comfortable for me than, you know, do this bit and this bit and this bit. So I think I'm still sort of developing that, seeing, you know, combining the two to kind of find a balance.
Right.
I think I'm still, you know, like so many comics, I've been doing this for 10 years, 20 years. I mean, I don't have all those years that I have been doing it. So I think I'm definitely, you know, still changing and developing it and that kind of thing.
What did being a nursery school teacher, working at Neiman Marcus, like, did any of that sort of, did any of those experiences sort of stick with you in some way, or sort of, do you see parts of yourself that are a result of sort of those experiences at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, some of those jobs I also did when I was, you know, doing the acting, and I mean, at Neiman's, I didn't realize you actually had to work. I thought, I get to stay here all day and shop for the day.
And just try things like, on.
Right. And I was like a floater. I didn't even know what that was.
Oh,
like,
God.
Like Peter Pan on the ceiling. But it was like I would go to different departments.
Right.
And I was like, you know, you worked on commission. And I was like, what's that? You know, so it would be like, you know, you haven't met your quota. And I'm like, quota? Is that a math thing? Because I don't understand any kind of thing, you know. So I really, that was, yes, and I, it was very, there were a lot of very, you know, funny things that would go on there. And then the preschool, I mean, that was just, you know, I taught mostly at these Jewish schools, and half the time, you know, these kids were like 40 years old and they hadn't been potty trained. And my friends thought it was a riot that I'd walk around, you know, and because I was like, they always see me as this this little princess, and I'd be walking around with like gloves to my elbows, like I was.
That's like how you do.
During surgery.
The nuclear fallout.
Exactly. So it was like, yeah, those were sort of these, you know, very, you know, different kind of jobs.
Yeah.
That I had.
But all good stuff to tap into.
I remember, I'm sorry, what?
I just said all good stuff to tap into when you're writing comedy.
Exactly,
yeah. But you were saying you had this one.
Oh, no, I remember I worked on a movie. I was the assistant to, well, my cousin, and he's a producer, and his name is David Landsberg. And years ago, when I was like 21, he said, you can be my assistant on this movie I'm doing. And it was like downtown. And his co-star said to me, and this is when I thought, you know, you throw the envelope out the window and that's someone, you know, the bird gets the mail and makes a crap on it. But so he says to me, I want you to get in my car. I have a stick. I want you to get me 79 hats, baseball caps with like Arabic numerals. And we were like in the middle of nowhere, you know, somewhere out on a night shoot, you know, in El Camino, who knows?
Right.
And I like had to call my mother, what's a stick?
Oh my God.
What's a hat? What is it? Where do you get? How do you print? I mean, I was like, I always call myself like Peter Sellers in Being There.
Oh my God. That's like, I know
like
that.
I had no idea, you know, so when he said, I looked and I nodded, you know, like I knew, like I was, and I had absolutely no idea.
Right.
You know.
And you're how old again? How old are you at this point?
I'm 73.
No, I'm not. At the time. Of the time.
I'm saying at the time I was so old. No, I was like 21.
God, you really should know that stuff at 21. That's pathetic.
I know, right? I mean, I had no idea. And forget the stick, but take these. I was like, you know, I had absolutely. And if my father had answered the phone and I said, "What? How the hell do I know? Barbara?" You know, he would have had no idea either.
How did he, just one other question, where did that sort of style that he had that was uniquely him come from? Did that evolve over time? Was he, I think you mentioned he started out doing impressions, and then where did that sort of style of interaction and sort of, you know, riffing on people and all of that come from?
I think he told me this when he would work, you know, in the Slate Brothers in these clubs, at like 4 o'clock in the morning shows, you know, maybe he would do the imitations of his mother and he said his aunt and all these things. And the crowd, you know, and there'd be a bar, would start booing him. And so he would start insulting them.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's how he started. And he said, and sometimes, you know, the club owner would scream and chase him out, and he and his mother would get in the car, you know, she was like, you know, Gypsy's mother, you know, she was like a total stage mother. And they would jump in the car and leave. But yeah, they would boo him and heckle him. And so he started insulting them. And then people started to laugh at that. And that's how he started, you know, doing that. I mean, he also went, you know, to the American Academy of Dramatic Art in New York with Grace Kelly. I mean,
he's a good actor.
He's a serious actor. But then he started doing the stand, you know, and he was on Bewitched and all those shows, but he started doing the stand-up, and then that became, you know, that got really
He was famous. Good in Kelly's Heroes. He's good in Casino. He's actually, and that's the thing, like once you get labeled something, people, it's hard for them to see you in any other way. Right. Why do you think you're so comfortable talking to the audience? I mean, you're obviously a people person, and maybe because you've been around adults your whole life and had to sort of have adult conversations early on, or...
Well, it's funny because I'm actually incredibly shy. And
you?
When I was younger, when I was younger, I was like painfully shy. But I was always sort of like a performer type when it came to making people laugh.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I've always kind of been good on my feet in terms of, you know, there's some comics that are so great on stage, but in life they're just whatever. And I've more been like, I was always kind of funny my whole life, but that was my shyness. I was shy, but that was the one way that was like a part of me that made some people think, oh my God, she's so, you're shy. You know, if I let that come out,
yeah,
it was another, you know, side of
side, yeah.
But no, I've always been very, very shy.
Well, people should go see you at your show in, at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles. Great club, Monday, Monday, Mindy. And it's a regular thing there. And you got a podcast coming out soon. Which,
yeah, we're looking into that.
Which you're going to invite me on, which I'm going to be on, I assume.
Yeah, you know, Paul, you're not, I mean, the Pope is kind of begging again. I have some scientists lined up, so I don't know. But
all right,
see.
I'll send you a resume and headshot.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, I mean, what is that, John Stewart, Stephen Cook, who are these people?
I know, these are, they're all, you know, the people that I carry on my back, that's who they are. And are you doing any stand-up out on the road anytime in the near future?
Well, you know, I'm at the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. On the road, that's sort of, yeah, I'm hoping to go to New York this summer.
All right.
And maybe do some shows there.
You got to let me know when you come out. We'll hang out.
Oh, I would love that, Paul. Because Jews and Italians. So
come on.
Like,
you know what I'm saying?
We're the same.
We're the same, except you have all the money. Other than that.
Oh, yeah. That's
you,
right. That's
yeah,
right.
You got, we
but
do,
right.
We do your masonry work. We put your, like, we pave your driveway and put in the bricks.
And then as my dad would say, you got 500, you can come on the raft. See, I just channeled him.
There you go. Well, you're very, very funny. Oh, by the way, I love the bit in the Late Late Show appearance about the, you know, going on a date as like an audition. People should go on YouTube and really see that set. It's really, really funny. Yeah. And follow you online and look for your dates.
I'm on Twitter at Mindy Rickles, and I just started on Instagram. I'm trying to,
good.
You know.
I think that's where
the,
some of those glory.
Explain that to me happens.
Right.
Because.
And that's where some of those Gloria Swanson references will really resonate with people. Yeah,
that gets me so many followers.
Boris Karloff, bring that one out.
Right.
Well, it's really great to have you on, and I really mean it. Let's get together in New York when you come. But it's
so
a real pleasure.
Well, I
yeah,
really appreciate
yeah,
it.
It's very, very funny. Mindy Rickles, go see her, and she's shy. If you see her off stage, just avert her eyes. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, that was Mindy Rickles. How great is she? Really cool. Very funny. She's got the same kind of rhythms and manner of speaking as her dad. And it was really cool to kind of hear what her dad was like around the house and just really enjoyed it. So hope you did too. And come check me out doing stand-up. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be at Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, California. Go to my website, check it out. It's May 31st to June 3rd. And then June 8th and 9th, I'm going to be at Governor's Long Island, Levittown, room. It's a really cool room. Been there forever. Great, great club. Come on out, and thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody.